Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, May 27th. I'm Olivia Rose. Retired podiatrist and Republican gubernatorial candidate Matt Halala visited Petersburg earlier this month as part of his campaign for governor. Halala hasn't held elected office, but says the skills he's learned in the private sector would give him an advantage in the governor's seat. He sat down with KFSK's Taylor Heckert to talk about what it would take to balance the state's budget.
Well, there's two aspects to a budget, right? You want to have a number at the bottom of your cash flow sheet that is a black number, not a red number. And we've not done that in a very long time. So we've been saying no to projects, whether it be oil and gas, mining, timber, which could be revitalized in a responsible way, of course. But we've gotten in this habit of being kind of fat and sassy from the last boom and getting complacent with our obligation to keep a vital economy. And so getting from a culture of no to a culture of yes, that's the number one thing. The other aspect of a budget is that you have to look at spending. And spending is an issue that's the hardest thing to reduce because legislators have constituencies that rightfully have very loud voices. But we need a money flows visibility effort. People get a little tired and their eyes glaze over when I say transparency, because we all hear that all the time, right? Well, the point is to make sure that the monies that are allocated for important things are truly being utilized correctly for those services.
And to make sure I'm understanding you right, It sounds like when you're saying yes to those projects, a lot of those are resource extraction and development projects.
Yep. Those are our assets. You know, we have products here in Alaska that Alaska needs, our country needs, and our allies need. And I think more than ever, being reliant on adversarial nations and things for critical things like critical minerals, for energy in particular, places us in a very vulnerable spot.
I'd love to move on to education.
Yep.
When I talk to our school administrators, they tell me that if we don't get an increase in state funding, we're going to have to make really, really tough decisions in the coming years. So if you were to be governor, how would you propose the state is able to fund schools while also giving districts stability and certainty?
When you're out of money, when you go broke from being in that culture of no for 30 years, there's no limit to what we can encounter as a problem and no limit to what we fight over. Stacy and I, my wife and I, we've been married 36 years. We graduated from Soldotna High School in 1988, but it was a very different world back in the 1970s and 80s. And not all public schools are serving students and families the way that they wish them to be, right? And rightfully, families are choosing for their child whether or not they stay there or make a choice to go elsewhere. Public education needs adequate funding, period. It's an obligation. It's constitutional. And so we have something very unusual. We have over 200 individual school districts across the state, and we have very, very expensive fixed infrastructure serving a decreasing number of students. So we need to consolidate some of these in rural Alaska in particular, or better yet, see if we can partner with tribal and native corporations to find a solution, because many of these schools are needing significant maintenance and repair.
I'd also like to touch on the Marine Highway System, also a very, very vital part of our life here in Southeast Alaska. But we know that the system has this aging fleet. We have a shortage of certified staff. So if you were to be governor, what is the path forward for the Alaska Marine Highway System?
Well, I think first of all, the entire state needs to recognize that transportation infrastructure is not just roads and rail. Where we can't build roads and tunnels, we must maintain access with the ferry system. And so, again, it's one of those things that when you run out of money, you know, we rely on efficient management. And it's my understanding that a lot of the scheduling and inefficiencies that has occurred is from top-down decision-making. Again, I was speaking to a naval commander within the Joint Command here in Alaska about how they're using AI to better plan where to refuel some of these cutters and ships. In many instances, just having a better plan of how to manage what you do have. So I think that that would be something else to lean into.
And Matt, I've heard you talk about AI a few times in this conversation.
Yep.
If you were to be governor, do you think AI would be an important part of how state runs?
It's so critical. We were in a forum with eight other candidates. One of the older ones said, I don't know what it is, but I guess we have to deal with it. Another one said, if I find anyone in my campaign using AI, they're fired. And I said, I've got news for you. AI is here, and if you're not leaning into it, you're going to be left in the dust.
That was Republican gubernatorial candidate Matt Halala talking with KFSK's Taylor Heckert. This was an abbreviated version of the interview. To hear the full conversation, visit our website, kfsk.org. The Juno Assembly may have found a path out of the red for its budget last Wednesday, but it wasn't easy. KTOO's Clarice Larson breaks down what they chose to cut and keep as the deadline nears for finalizing the city's budget for the next fiscal year.
It was a late-night Finance Committee meeting on Wednesday night for the Assembly. They spent more than 5 hours voting on a list of what to cut and what to keep as the city faces a multi-million dollar shortfall next fiscal year. There were a lot of numbers, amendments, and as Mayor Beth Weldon pointed out, things got messy.
Now I'm totally confused, and it's 10:30 at night.
Yes, and it is 10:30 at night.
The Assembly voted not to close the Douglas Fire Station, which was on the chopping block Wednesday night, but they did unanimously vote to close and sell the Mount Jumbo Gym. It voted last week to also preserve Juno's pools, Diamond Park Fieldhouse, and social service grants. The Assembly also decided to not close the Juno Douglas City Museum, but instead, they voted in a 7-2 split to reduce the museum's annual funding by $261,000. Deputy City Manager Robert Barr explained that it wouldn't close the museum, but it would mean laying off 2 staff members and drastically reducing the museum's hours.
The number of hours would be, I would say, more variable than they are right now because the staffing would be significantly reduced. And I would say our ability to be open regular hours would be very challenging at this level, but we would have the ability to be open sometimes.
The roughly $250,000 cut would also eliminate the museum's capacity to host public programs like First Fridays, exhibit openings, and school class visits. Assemblymember Maureen Hall voted against any reductions to the museum, arguing there are other ways to balance the budget that wouldn't be as drastic.
It's our history, and I don't think we should be cutting off access to it as we ponder how to move forward.
The Assembly also voted to reduce funding to Travel Juno, the city's landscaping budget, the Juno Economic Development Council, the Jensen Olsom Arboretum, and eliminate an administrative support position in the city's administration department. The Assembly also advanced a plan that plays a significant role in getting the budget in the black. It voted to pull $2.7 million from a 1% temporary sales tax that voters approved in 2022, meant for the city's restricted budget reserve, and instead moved it to the general fund. The restricted budget reserve is essentially the city's rainy day fund and meant for extreme emergencies or unexpected events. The Assembly voted to maintain funding to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, the Small Business Development Center, the city's Affordable Housing Fund, and the city's staff and travel training budget. Assemblymember Alicia Hughes-Scandes said supporting housing development is critical for Juno's future.
We are in a super housing crisis. This is not the time that you press the brake. It is the time you hit the gas. It is not the time you reduce funds. I understand we are in the fiscal situation that we are in, but when you are looking for areas to make cuts, this is not where you look.
The Assembly is also looking at ways to increase city revenue, like revising the city's sales tax cap on some higher-priced items and services, and lowering the property tax hardship exemption income level. If the Assembly votes to act on any of those ways to increase revenue, it may choose to reverse some cuts made on Wednesday before it finalizes the budget. Assemblymember Christine Wall reminded the Assembly that nothing is permanent yet.
What we are trying to do tonight is come to a holistic budget that we can pass to the full Assembly so that the public can get one more opportunity to give us feedback on it. And nothing is set in stone until we vote as a full Assembly on June 8th.
Residents will have another chance to testify on the budget at a meeting on June 8th. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
State lawmakers passed 2 bills on the last day of the legislative session aimed at fulfilling requirements of a federal health care expansion effort. One of those, House Bill 110, would make it easier for out-of-state doctors, physician assistants, psychologists, social workers, and EMS personnel to get licensed in Alaska by joining what are known as interstate compacts. The Department of Health told federal officials in its application for a share of the $50 billion in funding from the Rural Health Transformation Program that Alaska would join the various compacts. Alaska is on track to receive more than $1 billion from the program. Anchorage Democratic Senator Forrest Dunbar says that's the primary reason for joining the compacts.
This is the Rural Health Transformation Program bill. That's why these compacts are being done, because the administration committed to the federal government that we would pass or attempt to pass a number of these compacts.
The bill passed unanimously in the state house, but there was more controversy in the Senate. The bill passed 13-7 in the upper chamber, and in a rarity, all of the no votes came from members of the bipartisan majority. Joining a compact means subscribing to a shared set of rules for doctors, EMS providers, and so on. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Geisel, a nurse practitioner and the Senate's number two leader, said Alaska is a unique place and should be able to impose its own rules.
I don't want to give up that authority to look at these medical professions and what they can do in our state. We are the only ones who care about and understand our state's needs.
The bill would not have the state join an interstate compact for nurses. That compact faces much stiffer opposition, including from the state's largest nursing union. The legislation now heads to Governor Mike Dunleavy, and his office declined to say whether he'd sign it. Riding a bike to school can be tough in Nome. The roads have tiny shoulders and only a handful have sidewalks. Yesterday, students tried a safer way to make the trip together. KNOM's Ben Townsend reports.
It's an overcast, windy day in Nome, but that isn't stopping Tessa Timbers Piana from taking part in the town's first bike bus.
We woke up early and had a big breakfast. I had eggs, bacon, and cinnamon and sugar toast.
Instead of piling into a yellow school bus, nearly two dozen students are riding their bikes. The route takes them from the rec center in town to Anvil City Science Academy, 4 miles to the north. ACSA parent Jeff Collins is leading the ride.
Nice job coming to the first bike bus. It's going to be hard because we're going to be going into the wind. I'm going to say that right away. We have to go over some things with safety, though.
Collins lays out the rules for today's ride, which includes several road crossings.
But when you hear one whistle blow, that'll be our go sign, okay? So when you hear, what do? When it's time to go, okay? When you hear, that's going to be stop.
Okay.
Ready?
ACSA principal Emily Annis watches the group set off to the west with a smile plastered on her face.
I love our kids and I love our community, and I just want to do things that are like core memory events. And I hope for them this is a core memory event, because I know for me it will be.
Annis organized the ride after seeing a similar bike bus in Portland on social media. She admits Nome's looks a little different.
We don't have sidewalks. We don't have bike paths. We, you know, the roads, we got muskox, you know, like we don't have, really good shoulders. We have some shoulder to go over on, but in town, you know, there's not a lot of room for vehicles and students.
You can't miss the mob of bikes. By riding together, it's easier for the drivers to spot them, which means it's safer. And for this first ride, a police car up front and fire truck in the back certainly helps too. Some bikes are in better shape than others. The group makes several stops to put chains back on gears and air up tires. They pause just once for a crash.
Oh, we have a crash. You all right, bud?
Okay.
Were you riding here? No hands again? Okay.
Nearly an hour and a half after starting, the group rounds the corner of campus to cheers and handmade signs of encouragement.
Yeah, don't run over people!
With just days left on the school calendar, Colin says the ride was a good test for future bike buses.
I mean, this is part of it, is building the culture around. And Nome's not really conducive to doing this. Laura and I bike these roads constantly. This is honestly the absolute safest ride I've ever been on.
In the afternoon, students will strap up their helmets for the ride home, hopefully with fewer scrapes along the way. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.